Alex, congratulations.
Thank you. We enjoyed every moment of it.
Well, you know, that what a perfect lead-in, because you enjoy you obviously enjoy winning more than not winning. But you guys are so so good for the game, and just smile win or lose, and you bring a very healthy attitude toward the race day and the race game.
We're very good actors.
No. I love it.
Well, it is a great game, and we thoroughly enjoy it, and to be around the horse. And, I always tell them, if you're not around the backside, some are with all the other people from A to Z that are involved in the game, you're missing an awfully big part of it.
There's no doubt. And, you've operating in a lot of different capacities too, because of course the Arkansas Racing Commission, you're volunteering time toward that, and I do want to talk to you about some of the administration portions of your involvement, but let's talk about the fun stuff first. And this filly, the thing that struck me immediately is that this is, to my memory, Alex, one of the best early horses that you guys have had. I mean, we're certainly used to, what went on with Telling and the Big Beast and Embellish the Lace, whose biggest wins came, at three and beyond. This is early. This is a win early horse for you.
It is early. Yeah, always we've been a little, maybe too patient, but that's it. When one comes out early and pokes his head out, then you need to go on. But I've always told them, said, unless they tell you they're ready to go, don't worry about it on our account, So it's just she decided early on that she was ready, and I have to give a big thanks to Robbie Harris, because he was one at the sale. And I've known Robbie for a long time, and he's broken a lot of horses for me. And he said, hey, have you seen this such-and-such filly over at TaylorMade? And I said, no. And he said, y'all go take a look. And like I say, after I looked at her, it didn't take long to look at her, to like her. And she has just, progressed. And a lot of them, they'll progress for a while and then back up a little bit and then get going again. But she's just, kept putting one foot in front of the other. And so when Steve said, hey, she's... Because I don't push for them to be ready at Saratoga. But he said, this one's ready for Saratoga. And I said, okay. And when somebody like Asmussen tells you that, and Robbie through the horses training tells you, they're doing well. In fact, when Robbie came to me, he said, I found you another Embellish the Lace. And I said, well, and he did break Embellish the Lace. So that really got my interest up.
Well, this win, the win of Frizette, obviously, does a lot toward recovering the $500,000 purchase price as a yearling. It makes her, instantly valuable down the road. But there's some big things ahead, and we'll talk about, what's coming up. But I do want you to flesh out the philosophy that you and Joanne have in terms of stock acquisition and development and also how it's changed over the years.
Well, we've gotten a little bit smarter just through trial and error, I'll give it that. And it's taken a long time to, we come from a little bit of a quarter horse background, the thoroughbred, and there's some differences there. And I got tickled about, there's a lot of difference. I was watching one of the ball games last night, and somebody made the comment about, they were talking about some of the trades that the Washington Senators had made over here, and they brought this guy up and said, yeah, he threw three shutouts in 5 days. And I thought, yeah, that sounds like thoroughbred. They used to do a lot of, can you imagine throwing three shutouts in 5 days now?
It's a fair point.
It is, not unlike what we're going through, or the same way in football. I mean, how many times I'm old enough to realize, remember when people actually played offense and defense, or they played doubleheaders. Yep. Those kind of things, they've changed for those sports and ours.
There's no doubt. And how did you? And I didn't realize that you put in time with the quarters. You talk about your regional aspect too. I mean, coming from Arkansas, and you know what? When did you first get involved with any kind of equine sport?
Oh, we were probably in junior high school or somewhere in there, and that's when the rodeo and the aspect starts here, and then you get into high school rodeos and semi-professional rodeos. I guess you're playing for money, but I mean it's usually kind of a weekend circuit, so to speak. And back then, I always remember my wife, she had a horse called Long John, and they would run barrels off of him, run poles, and then rope and bulldog all off the same horse all the same night. And then I'd had a horse, you could run 26 head of calves off him, and we'd go home and we'd kick him out in the pasture, and we'd look at each other now and say, did we mistreat our horses that much? Because they were just, you just didn't think anything about it. Now you get with thoroughbreds and you look at them wrong and they kind of go backwards on you. But it's just again, it's the same way with the human athlete, I think, in a lot of ways over the same time period.
And then on the purchase and the building of building a string, what did you do when you first got involved, and how has that changed with yearling purchase versus 2-year-old in training, and because you've dabbled in a couple of areas.
Yeah, and we still do. One thing, I've probably gotten more involved in doing the actual footwork and going and looking at horses, and I enjoy that part of it just about as much as I do the racing of the horses. And now that we've got the big beast in, it's a lot of fun to watch some of his offspring run, and you kind of get just the same nervous, sweaty hands watching offspring of his run for somebody else as you do with own them. I never thought I would get that much pleasure out of it, but that's one new angle for us. But I think more than anything, I think going through the sales, and just like Robbie finding this horse, when I found the big beast, I found his brother first, because somebody had said, hey, there's a horse you need to go look at this barn. So I was on my way up there, and another horse caught my eye on the way up there, and I stopped and looked at this horse, and it was Big Beast half brother. It was a horse that we later called Big Luke, and he was a fairly decent horse, but he got hurt in the Southwest. But that's what led me to the Big Beast. And so, like I say, I enjoy the treasure hunt as much as anything.
Well, and when it came to supporting the Big Beast, when the horses started to come to market, and in fact, I can think about when I saw you at the April sale. At OBS, or March, or it must have been April, and you were shopping the Big Beast babies, and how many did you end up getting involved with?
Oh, I think I only bought two or three. Being a serial offender like I am, sometimes it's hard to remember. But they've both been, have not disappointed me yet. One has made me happier than the other, but then neither one has disappointed me. And then we have some homebreds, and I think this year I probably got 10 or 11 mares in foal. So I'd say it's just a whole new, chapter in it, and I enjoy that with the other part of it.
Well, and the most recent was what? The Big Affair, the one that David Fox has down in Florida.
Right, Big Affair. We've had Big Affair, Big Spring, and somebody ran second the other day, Classy Beast. I think she got second her first time out. So they've been somewhat of a success for us, and we're tickled to death.
Well, in addition, of course, to to have a 2-year-old emerge like this, you certainly in the early part of the year, you mentioned the Southwest, but you had any number, it seemed, that were arcing toward a Triple Crown try and an involvement on the Classic Trail. Laughing Fox was the one that really felt like a horse that was going to keep developing and was going to get better as the distances stretched out. And give us an update on Laughing Fox.
He gave us a great year last year, and one race that I was really tickled winning was we won the the very first Oakland Invitational. So I thought that was neat. One thing they can't take that away from you is winning the first one. And so that was very, very neat. And that put him in where he got to run in the Preakness. And we tried a couple of deeper spots after that. Maybe we were probably a little over enthused doing that. But right now, well, we gave him at least 90 days off. And he's enjoying life right now, and he deserved it, and hopefully he'll be back for the first part of Oakland.
Nice. On the Oakland front, we'll circle back and talk a little bit Arkansas, because for those that might not have noticed coming out of the Frisette, pretty notable Arkansas exacta for those that play that way with Frank Fletcher. Frank's Rocket running second. Did you have a side bet with Frank?
No, but we had a lot of good conversation and talked with him last night about it. He's a great guy, and he's done a wonderful job supporting thoroughbred racing. And you know, my wife's been involved with the chaplain's organization here at Oakland, and they have a fundraiser every year, and she'll go around and ask for people, which is a tough job, ask people for donations or put up this or doing that. And Frank's always been so nice and so giving and helping her when she was doing the banquets and that for the Chaplain Association. So he's a great guy, and he's put a lot of money into the game.
Very much. You prevail here, and actually, Frank's Rocket ended up going favored. Looking ahead to Breeders' Cup, some thoughts, and what is Steve and Scott, what have they been telling you? And it feels like a pretty wide-open group, the Juvenile Fillies.
Yeah, it really does. I think there's a couple, you know, nice horses from California, a couple nice horses from the Midwest and the East, and so, you know, I don't think there hasn't looked like a dominant horse out there yet, I'll put it that way. And so I think you know, everybody's telling, and as far as Steve and Scott, what they're saying, I know Scott sent me a picture of her today. She was sleeping, says she loves to sleep, and I love to hear that, because if a horse kind of takes care of itself instead of pacing or running the stall, so to speak, you're one step ahead of where you could be.
There's no doubt that is
care of herself.
Yeah, no, that is a you know, that is a big positive. That if you got a young horse that lays down knows how to relax, no, that's a knows how to switch it on and off. That's a terrific sign.
Oh, it is. Yeah, and like I say, she's done that, and then I know Scott has given me updates, Steve went out there. I guess he got back yesterday, and he just watched her go around the track a couple of days, and he was very pleased the way she was handling it. And you know, the travel out there, she didn't. You always want to say, well, do you shrink up too much, or you know, do you draw up? And they were not seeing any of those effects. So we're so far so good. But like they always say, they're just about like strawberries. They can go wrong at any moment. So we're well aware of that.
Well, you're set. Joelle staying with her.
I just one thing I told Steve about a week and a half ago. I said, I'm not saying a word on the jockey. That's up to you 110%. I said that way. You can't blame me, and that. So I'll leave that with Steve.
All right, and as it happens, I reached out to Ron Anderson the other day, and I was kind of curious about what his, you know, where he stood with his calls, because it sure felt to me that Rosario was sitting, you know, in a very advantageous position going into Breeders' Cup. Well, excited for you guys to go forward with this filly. You know, the Liam's Map portion of the story is intriguing. You know, contributing to his good start as a stallion, and there's obviously a lot of people that are going to, you know, be rooting along with you and with Joanne. Let me also get some conversation in Alex, about what you're doing back in Arkansas. And, of course, things are so good at Oaklawn. And the expansion of the, you know, of the facility itself, the addition of this casino and hotel that they've started to build. I mean, talk a little bit about what has transpired, because you've really seen it, you know, had a front row seat in Hot Springs for what has gone on with one of American racing's best success stories.
It really is, and they're hard to find. You know, I think one of the most interesting things is you go out there on a weekend where you've got good racing and good weather. It's nothing. And I don't mean, it doesn't have to be Rebel Day. I mean, you can look out there and see 35,000 people. And that is, and when you come to the Derby itself, it's nothing if you have the right weather. You know, you can draw 60,000 people. And I think most of the credit goes to the Sella family, and they're just their commitment to racing, and they really do, you know, love it. And they and it's a point of pride with them. And they try, always, this is one thing I've watched going from different tracks, they try to work with the horsemen, and they're asking the horsemen's input, and they're getting two-way conversations. Now, you might not like the way it always ends up, but they are interested in what you have to say. And so I think, you know, that's unusual. I've been in a lot of other tracks. They're not really, they don't ask for a lot of input. And I'm not telling them they should, but I'm just using that as a point that the sellers have done that. So that has brought on, the gaming has obviously added tremendously to the purses. And now the, what we've been dealing with the last year or so is Arkansas passed a casino amendment. So we've got at least one more casino coming up, and possibly another if some other things legally happen that could add to purses further on top of what we're doing.
Do you have any feel or thought, Alex, about why the culture and how we can have, you know, such successful hotbeds of the sport? And, you know, you and Joanne spend summers at Saratoga and winters at Hot Springs. And you certainly travel to other, you know, other venues when you, you know, whether it's you know, Triple Crown season and lead up and whatnot. How can we be under such duress in a major marketplace like California and yet have just these outlandish successful, you know, centers that are thriving? It's a very strange dynamic that's going on.
It is. I think, again, it goes, there's several things that are contributing to it. One, I think, is that when you have kind of the spa-type meet, you know, I say the shorter meets where everybody looks forward to them, and you can look at the crowd now and you see the younger crowd out there, and you know, it becomes a social event. You see the same thing happening somewhat, not somewhat, you do see the same thing at Keeneland, you know, where it really is something that everybody looks forward to. But when you carry it too far, and then it loses some of its luster, I think, the further you carry it in time. In other words, if you know you got 6 months or 9 months of racing there, I think, you know, people get kind of tired after a while.
And also, I mean, and I completely agree. I mean, there is a factor that kind of wears down, but whether it's the culture of the horse, as they talk about in let's say certainly the Southwest, but that isn't necessarily the case in this, you know, where I am, I'm, you know, outside of Saratoga, I just don't, I look at the complaints that, yeah, and the attacks on the game from these certain marketplaces, and this acute, not concern, but the over dramatization of aspects of the sport. And there's a much greater, it seems, obviously, a greater understanding in a place like Hot Springs that that understands that there's aspects that can only be controlled up to a certain point.
I think that's it, and I think if people are willing to have areas where they're willing to have a reasonable conversation, and sometimes that's hard to come by in lots of things today. And, you know, one of the best education, I had a little banking business through this morning and did that, but I think the best education I got this morning was driving my 16-year-old granddaughter to school. I said, you know, that's more educational, and listened to her different points of views on different things. But then I told her, I said, I thoroughly enjoyed it. But I said, the important thing is you just got to learn to, you might not agree with somebody, but listen to what they have to say and look at it from all angles. And look, horse racing has some wonderful people. 99% of them are wonderful people, from the groom to the hot walker to the owners. There's some bad apples in everything. And, I mean, there's always somebody that's going to try to get an edge. I don't care if you're racing bicycles, or you're playing hopscotch for money. Somebody's going to try and get an edge. And you just got to know that's out there, and you can guarantee we're doing our best to catch them. And I'm sure other jurisdictions are, because, like in our state, on our commission, I'm going to say, 3/4 of the commissioners have horses. Well, nobody wants anybody to have an unfair advantage. And on top of that, we want the best thing for the horse. And I have a saying in our operation, it needs to be a three-legged stool. It's got to be good for the trainer, it's got to be good for the owner, and it's got to be good for the horse. And every once in a while, it's got to be better for the horse, and maybe the trainer and the owner take a little bit of a back seat, so to speak. So if you had to fudge it one way or the other, the horse has got to come first. And most people I've dealt with in the game play on those same rules.
Has there been aspects for you of administration when it came to the commission, to the Arkansas Commission? Was there anything that's come as a surprise in your involvement or things that are glaring weaknesses? Because it's obvious that certain elements of the industry are trying to attack the state commissions and the system that is currently regulating the sport, with their interest being the federal legislation. What, from your intimate experience running the commission, what are the positives and what are the negatives of the regulation program that we have as an industry now?
Yeah, there's some negatives into it, that we might do things a little bit different in Kentucky, and Florida might do different and this and that. But the one good thing is, if you don't like the way Florida's doing something, you can go to Kentucky. And the one thing I preach when I'm at it, and talking to somebody, I'm in several businesses, and I deal in several federal agencies, and they all mean well. But once you get a federal agency coming in there and they don't really understand your sport, the hardest part of my jobs in the different business I am that I'm involved in is dealing with federal regulators. And I can tell you, from SEC to the banking to the EPA, I deal with several of them. And that's, I just don't really think they belong in horse racing.
That it could only complicate, that it would further complicate, what is
and
already
involved. And they would mean well. I'm not taking it, but, when you bring in a regulatory body like that wants to make a square peg fit in a round hole, sometimes it just won't fit. And I've just watched that over and over with these other businesses, and, from the farming business, the oil and gas business, to the banking business, security business, and it is it's rather frustrating sometimes, and it's because it's humans involved on both sides. But at least when the state, look, Arkansas Racing Commission, we want fair racing and safe racing. Because, one, we've got horses out there. And if that's what you're striving for, and I think the other states are the same way, too. And everybody tries to jump on one. I got tickled. I was asking a friend of mine in quarter horse the other day. He raised some barrel horses. And we were talking. I said, at least y'all don't have the health issues. You got the quarter horses. He said, oh, yes, they do. And we went on and on. And they've got the same problems, a lot of physical problems with the quarter horses that we're having with thoroughbred that are running barrels. And, I mean, they're doing tie backs and tie forwards on horses that are running barrels now. And that really blew my mind. And so it's not, you know, it's just, it's, and I think one thing we've got to take a responsibility is what we bred. Everybody wants that early 2-year-old that's going to get it. They don't want that 4-year-old running, and the mathematics makes the argument for having a 2-year-old, and you almost can't afford to run them as a 4-year-old because of the cost of running them and the cost of insurance versus what they're worth in the breeding shed.
Well, and there's actually a there's going to be a problem on that front because people are going to have to be patient. I mean, we track pedigree conversations and our visits with Sid, and I mean the vast majority of stallions that are going into the marketplace are at the very least middle distance based. There's very little speed, you know, precocious speed stallions out there anymore, and so you got to be patient. And then you've had, as I started the conversation with you, I mean, when you think about what Telling did, and you know, the Big Beast as well. I mean, he was one of those horses by his physical size, you had to be patient with.
Right. We were fortunate in having him in the right hands that took the right time with him at the right time. You know, you kind of got to look at it as a culture that. We're lacking, we're losing our one thing that we probably didn't have that much to begin with, is patience. And I don't care whether or not you're investing or, you know, let's say, what were you up this quarter? What was it last quarter or something? When you really should be taking, probably in this business, you know, a 2 or 3 year outlook. But they want to sit there and say, hey, you know, maybe we watched too much CNBC saying how much was the market up or down today. And that's, we're doing the same thing with horses.
Well, an exciting second half of the year. You had plenty of things.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9. 3-8-4-6-4-3.
Well, I guess you guys lost me for a second there. Alex, you still there?
I'm still here. No, we went over the allotted time or what?
I don't know what happened. All of a sudden, they just said, "Oh," and I looked and I saw that the signal dropped. I just was wishing you the best of luck getting her into the cup and looking forward to seeing you and Joanne and you know, from the industry perspective. Thanks for all the contributions and all the different ways that you impact the game.
Well, thank you very much. We're just honored to be in, and that we understand how lucky we are just to be in. So that's what I think the general public doesn't understand, just how hard it is to get to the dance.
Exactly right. And Wicked Whisper going to absolutely be a major factor going in to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. Alex Lieblong, everybody. And you doing any tweeting on the Grand Sensation, right? You still...
I do, but I try to keep it to a minimum.
Yeah, I don't blame you. For those though that want to wish Alex and Joanne good luck or congratulate them after any of their wins, you can see Alex and follow him on Twitter, Grand Sensation. Alex, thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for what you do. Thank you, sir.
Not at all. My pleasure. Alex Lieblong, one of our favorite people, and they're one of those families that that has made the transition to, you know, spend summers at Saratoga, and you know, so many people that they come, and really a lot of the success that they've had, now that I think about it, has been Saratoga-based. I mean, King's Bishop, right? King's Bishop, and telling one the Sword Dancer. He may want it twice. Did he win it twice? I think Telling One too. Going back, Steve Hobby will be mad if I don't recall how many Sword Dancers that the Telling One, how many he won. No, they do. They're invaluable. We'll stay here since you took a little bit of that commercial break we were going to take anyway. So let's stay here. There you go. We'll pick it right up, and we're going to have Bill Gallo join us momentarily, actually, from National Steeplechase, and we'll get his advance. Let me do this, though, while we wait for Bill. I wanted to give you the results from Charlestown, actually, the other night, and also address what transpired in the gate. And I know that Running to Love You, you know, that the people were alarmed about the rearing in the gate and then letting him run. And Running to Love You is a notorious, Tim Grahams will be the first to tell you, a notorious bad actor. And there's any number of times that he's pulled stunts like that, rearing in the gate antics in the paddock and out on the racetrack going to the gate. So for those that are questioning why they let Running to Love You, you know, leave, why they didn't scratch him at the gate, it's because they've been dealing with that from him for a while. So that was a contributing, you know, element to what went on there on Saturday with him. And otherwise, the West Virginia Classics were interesting. That included, how about the two-year-old out of that race? There was Castlebound for Jim Casey. And earlier, the full two-year-old sister. And of course, Castlebound, at a big price, it was 60-1. The full sister, the two-year-old filly, also a winner on the card. And I'm searching for her. I think it was early. Yeah, there it is. Bound to Be Bad. And I suppose that was a big price too, 11-1. And you had Big Mutuals. That was in the Triple Crown Nutrition for the two-year-old fillies. But three wins for Casey on the night, and the Taylor Mountain. Crystal Pickett too had a nice had a pair of wins as well on the card. Jeff Runco, Penguin Power, at a short price. The older, the 7 furlong for older males. And Pickett with Dr. Feelgood in the Dash for Cash. the 4.5, and his bandit, Jerry Robb. How old is she now? 5 years old. Yeah, she's been very good. And she was like 1-9. So there's a few of the results from Saturday night at Charlestown. Casey's other winner came in that nightcap, the Roger Ramey distaff, Bee's Wild Cork, a Dennis a Cork filly. So there you go. I've been sitting on the desk for a couple of days. Sitting on my lap right now, though, the Far Hills card. And Bill Gallo swings in. And Bill, at the very least, you get to take some bows for putting together just an unbelievable Saturday of racing. I talked yesterday to Guy, and the Grand National, obviously the centerpiece of the action, but the other six races, equally terrific. Well done.
Thank you, Steve. And we're really excited about it. It's our championship day. Seven races, seven stakes, 71 horses after scratches. We're in a good spot here, and really looking forward to it. The weather is going to cooperate. We're going to really hopefully get some nice rain there at Far Hills today, which will set up perfectly for the ground. Should be absolutely pristine for Saturday.
In terms of the scratch calls today, anything of impact or any surprises?
No surprises. The mayor, Prabhalangora, the Mullins mayor, is scratched out of the Grand National and is going to run as the favorite. Should be a prohibitive favorite in the Philly and Mare Stake. So we've got 12 in the Grand National, a stellar field. I can't remember a better field than this. It's absolutely remarkable, too, from Gordon Elliott and Willie Mullins and Nikki Henderson with Brain Power. They're coming from everywhere. We've got not only the top horses, we've got the top riders. I don't think the American public really knows how good these guys are. Patty Kennedy, Jack Kennedy, Paul Townend, Robbie Power, Davy Russell. I mean, these are premier, world-class steeplechase riders. So it complements the card, not just horse-wise, but jockey-wise. It's remarkable what Guy Torsolari and his race committee have done there at Far Hills. There's something for everyone. Literally, the first, right from the get-go, there's a three-year-old stake. And as you know, jumpers can't start until their three-year-old season. And they kind of come around for the first time in the fall. But it's a three-year-old stake. And then we put up this new four-year-old stake, that second race, that Harry Harris. Then we jump into the Philly stake. And then the novice stake, which is always an indicator of the stars to come. These horses will be running in grade one next year. And then we added this new wrinkle. They took out the timber fences and they added this flat race, a mile and a half stake, $50,000 purse. They're hoping to enhance that pot in the next couple of years to 100 or 100 and a half and really tie in the flat community with the jump community. It's going to be a really good betting race. We had one scratch in Lee, a six horse, and it stays with an 11 horse field. So that's something new, different, and going to be exciting. The Grand National, as I said, 12 horse field, one star after another, including last year's winner, Jury Duty. And we close it out with another stake. It's a little overnight stake, one of those ratings handicaps, going to 2 5/8, which is the same distance as the grade one. So it's a remarkable card. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it, to be honest with you. But
you got everybody. I mean, everybody that had any issues during the course of particularly of the summer, that, you know, that missed some assignments, it feels like everybody, you know, got healthy and they all came through at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, the only horse we're missing literally is Winston C, the star of the summer. And he had a little throat issue, and, you know, he'll be back next year. He's 100%. But in his absence, we have several horses coming off the bench. Iranistan, was a remarkable novice, and he's coming back off a year layoff and prepped nicely on the flat at Chouan. I can't say enough about the race. I can't say enough about the race meet. Like anything else, you know, the money brings them. And when you're talking about a $450,000 grade one and stakes throughout, you're going to get the international participation that Guy Torsolari has dreamed about for years. So next year is their 100th anniversary, and they're talking about a $1 million purse structure, which would be another, this $850 for Saturday, so it's another $100.5 million. I as much as I'm looking forward to Saturday, and I think down the line that next year will be even more remarkable, if you can believe that.
We'll handicap some races. I want to get some opinions from you because everybody gets to bet, and later today, once they draw the card for Belmont for the State Bred Showcase Day, there'll be a couple of races from New York that'll be integrated with Guy expects the 4th, 5th, and 6th, essentially, the Foxbrook and the flat mile-and-a-half race and the Grand National. Those will be the three races, Bill, that are going to be used for the cross-country?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, I think they're going to put one in front, and you know, Joe Longo, I'm waiting to hear from him, from Naira, but I believe they're going to have a flat race on the front end and the back end. So our races will be 4, 5, 6 on our card.
Very good. And the Grand National goes off at 4:20, so probably within a half an hour of that, and probably whatever race late in the card. Maybe I suggested the Turf, the Mohawk, or the Empire Classic, depending on the kind of field that they get, and they'll integrate it right in. The Signal, and last year we talked about what was going to be a goal and a handle target, obviously hoping to build off of last year's number, which pretty much met expectation, right, as I recall?
That was beyond expectation. I think it was a 2.210 on track, which was remarkable. First time out without a whole lot of advertising. For years, people have been going to Far Hills, not being able to bet. So that was, I know the Monmouth people were very pleased with that number. So we're definitely going to build on that. I would hope so. And, full fields, like anything else, full fields and quality horses, quality riders. I think it's going to just grow from here. I wouldn't be surprised if we can get to 300 on track this year, hopefully.
And then on a widespread basis, Monmouth is distributing the Signal. So on ADWs, is there any platform, Bill, that is not carrying the Signal on Saturday that know of, or everybody should have it?
Everybody should have it. I mean, it's the normal Monmouth Signal, which goes, I don't know how many outlets, but it's a whole bunch of them. It's going to be very easy to bet for sure. And it's going to be live streamed. Once again, it's a full television production. They got wonderful talent. Mark Johnson is probably the best race caller, certainly the best steeplechase race caller in the world, but one of the best in the world is coming over, and he's going to do the race call. So that in itself is another plus. Just gives it that international flavor and sense of quality.
Oh, very nice. For analysis, let's and we'll get some of your opinions, but is there a place for people, I know that, imagine that the Clancy's and Tom Law at thisishorseracing.com, that they'll have full coverage. How about at nationalsteeplechase.com?
No, we don't get into the handicapping element part, but we defer to the Clancy boys and Tom Law. They do a wonderful job. I'm going to meet with Joe at lunchtime today. And, they'll wrap their brain around this one pretty good. It'll be great coverage, some good analytics. And if you're looking for a place to go and help with your opinions, certainly go to thisishorseracing.com.
Let's get some thoughts from you. We'll start with the Grand National, and then we'll look at particularly the spots that are going to be part of the Naira Far Hills Pick 5. But your thoughts going into Saturday on the feature?
Well, I mean, I just finished the morning line. We took out the Philly Provolinguna, as I said. You're running the Philly Stake, leaves us 12. Wicklow Brave should be the betting favorite. He's pegged at 3-1. This is a sensational horse, a 10-year-old from Willie Mullins, and this is the highest rated horse. If you go onto racing
Post.com, you can look up those foreign horses and you see their ratings. This horse, a 156 rating, would be the highest of the group. And, you know, that alone, his overall experience. Horses won $1.3 million in England, 17 wins. I mean, this is an extraordinary animal. And just having him come over here is a privilege for us. So he certainly stands out. And you don't want to overlook Jury Duty. He won the race last year. He was the betting favorite last year. This is a tougher field, I will tell you. And I'm not saying he can't win, but it's going to be more challenging than last year. But Jury Duty is the Gordon Elliott horse. He's an 8-year-old, and he's won about 500,000 in his career. So, you know, the foreigners have a heavy hand between Wicklow Brave and Jury Duty. They're pegged at 3 and 4 to 1. Of the Americans, certainly Scorpion Answer is probably our best threat, our biggest threat. He's a 10-year-old. He's won $500,000, mostly in America. He won the Iroquois in the spring. So if he returns to that spring form, he was a fifth, beating 8.5 in the Belmont Stakes, that grade one, the Lonesome Glory. That was a handicap. This is weight for age. That's critically important here. They all carry 156. So our level weights, Scorpion Answer, who normally gives weight away, he could fire a good shot here. And there are others. I mean, I you know, the foreigners are scary. They really are. Brain Power, he's rated at 150. He gets his regular rider, Nico de Bonneville. I've never seen the guy ride, but I can assure you he's going to be very, very good. That's Nicky Henderson. When the foreign trainers ship over for these races, they come very well prepared. And they're a force for sure. First time Lasiks. I love the first time Lasiks for those foreign horses coming over. Certainly Jury Duty. You know, it didn't hurt his chances when he used Lasiks for the first time a year ago. But it's just absolutely sensational. Shepherd Barn. They tell me this Iranistan, who's the youngest horse in the race at 5 years old. He'll be 10 to 1 on the morning line. And if he's right and ready, he prepped on the flat at Shawan Downs, mile 3/8. He was second, beating the neck, and you know, it was a nice little performance, nice little tightener. It's a signal from Shepherd and his stable when a horse is ready, and they've had this particular race for his comeback race on the calendar for quite some time. So, you know, Iranistan wouldn't surprise if he runs a huge race here. But, you know, the Americans are going to have to deal with the foreigners for sure.
Bill, what did you make Brain Power?
Brain Power on the morning line will be 8 to 1.
8 to 1 on Brain Power. And the reason I'm bringing this up, how about Rocket Lad?
Rocket Lad did not.
Oh, no Rocket Lad. That's right. What am I looking at? The Storyteller.
Yeah, the Storyteller is a tricky horse. He's a 142 rated horse, but he's much better over the steeplechase, the bigger fence. Our hurdle is a little bit in between the smaller hurdles over there and the steeplechase fence. He's much higher rated in steeplechasing over there. So he's 15 to 1. He could be a value horse for sure. He gets Davy Russell, who's you know, outstanding. It's his regular rider. His last wasn't very good, but in May he ran a couple of really nice races. So he'll be a value horse for sure.
Well,
and first time Lasiks and Gordon Elliott. I mean, you know, I can't say enough about these guys. Gordon Elliott, Willie Mullins. I mean, you're not talking about these are sensational trainers. I mean, internationally, they send horses all over the world. They win all over the world, and they've had good success here.
Well, some of the other you know, players from a local standpoint that we've hit on over the course of the year. Leslie Young, who's had a good season. Radician and Rashan.
Yeah, I mean, Radician won that, won a novice race and, you know, looked really good doing it up in Saratoga. Came back in the Lonesome Glory, was sixth. Wasn't a great effort. The other horse is probably better. Rashan, first time U.S. He's rated 146, a pretty solid rating. He's 10-1 on the morning line. And Jack Kennedy, once again, these foreign guys, we got Jack and Patty Kennedy coming over. I think they're cousins, but I've seen Jack Kennedy ride, and he's terrific. They're all very strong finish riders. I know you know the Far Hills course is a big pull up the final hill. You jump the last and gallop to the wire. You know, you need a strong finish rider, and these foreign guys are particularly strong in the lane.
Well, the Grand National with a dozen and absolute difficult spot to, you know, whether you side with the simply with the Euros and this sequence when folding in the two races from Belmont, the pick five will be a lot of fun. Considering that the Hunt Cup ends up being a flat race, let's get some opinion instead on the Foxbrook, Bill, and see what your thoughts are in here.
Well, you know, the now horse is this Snap Decision. He's a former McGahee horse. He's done nothing wrong, absolutely. Broke his maiden easily, won easily at Saratoga by 38, and then came back at Belmont in that novice race. So, you know, it's just natural progression. He does pick up weight each time he wins an A other than. And so he carries the 56, gives away a little bit of weight, but he will be a prohibitive favorite. 8-5 on the morning line. He's very, very good. The two horse is interesting in Belisarius. He won this race last year. It's unusual that a horse will win, you know, compete in the same race. But he's still eligible novice. He won it last year. It was a split division last year. And he won it quite handily. So if there's anything to do with horses for courses, Belisarius has not been on his top form, but he may return to his form at this particular course. It's very different. It's not like the racetrack. It's undulating ground, big, wide, sweeping turns, you know, wonderful turf. So it suits certain horses better than others, and it might just suit Belisarius. It may not suit Snap Decision, but Snap Decision is going to be a favorite regardless. There's another really top horse here in Marcan. He ran at Saratoga. It's a little misleading as PP. He ran never straight, never won two, and he had difficulty in the race. He was bothered a couple of times. Clipped heels, had a bad fence, and was bumped, and it was a mess. He was a prohibitive favorite. So he's going to be, he's been looking at this race for quite some time. Trainer Ricky Henriksen, I wouldn't be surprised to see him return to his prior form, which was a stellar performance at Iroquois in May. He actually beat Snap Decision handily in that maiden special. So Snap Decision, Marcan, Belisarius, they'll be the three choices for sure.
Well, and that, you know, that'll be the first of the three races that feed into the Belmont hosted pick five. Who are the favorites in the early races? You mentioned the mayor, obviously, in the PPAC, Willie Mullins, and she'll be 2-5.
It's a handicap. She's carrying a bundle of weight at 59, but she deserves it, and I would not be surprised to see if she wins. Be surprised if she wins it. The three-year-old race is interesting. The 10 horse must see the dock. He's a multiple winner, and he'll be the favorite for sure. Leslie Young, first time U.S. Purchased the horse probably for this race, with this race in mind. The four-year-old race, interesting race, restricted to four-year-olds only. And called back, he's coming back, and he's really, really good. He won the three-year-old race last year by 11 with Jack Kennedy, and he came back after that and won again last fall. A couple of flat races to prep, very, very dangerous, logical favorite. The fillies we talked about. And the interesting is that the flat race could be interesting. I made Arnold Delacour the betting favorite. I mean, the morning line favorite, I should say. Surprise Twist, the three horse. Interesting. It's a really interesting race. And eventually down the road, I think it could be even more interesting with a bigger purse and more support from those flat guys. But Delacour, yeah, you know, his horse certainly fits the race. And, I'm thrilled that he's coming, and I'm wishing good luck.
And the favorite in the Appleton in the nightcap?
I guess the handicap is one of those 130 horses all the way, Jose. I mean, we made him the favorite. He's the old man. He's 9 years old. He's a grade one. He typically runs in grade ones. He's dropping into this level. It'd be tough. It'd be tough. He can run all day long. The 2 and 5 is going to suit him. And against lesser rivals, he should be very, very tough.
Well, looking forward, Bill, to seeing you on Saturday and the Far Hills race meet, the highlight of the steeplechase season. Bill Gallo, everybody, who is now available on Twitter. How you like Twitter so far?
Well, I'm just reading it. I'm not saying a word.
I love it, Bill. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Look forward to seeing you. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Bill Gallo, and we'll try to keep you as informed and as well armed for this on Saturday as possible. We'll get Clancy as well. Maybe we'll get my man Tom Herman. Maybe we'll get Tom in here and get some opinions from him Friday for weekend preview. That's a good idea. Steve Haskin tomorrow. Looking forward to Secretariat Festival activities and report. Steve made it through. He's got a big piece about Vino Rosso. I think he's all in on Vino Rosso for the classic. Nicole Russo tomorrow as well. We'll talk to Nick about the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint and get some sales reports, some sales news from her. Her colleague Mary Rippolini joined us today. Pete Bornatel, Sid, Alex Lieblong, and Bill Deja on the board. Good luck today if you're playing. Talk to you tomorrow.